Evening one and all. I know it's November. I know. Where'd it go? I mean, you go to the shops to try and, you know, like you do, you know, the day after Halloween to collect the cheap candy. And there wasn't any. It was all Christmas stuff. What the heck's going on? Here we are, November, and that's it. Well, I am here, and so is my guest. Now, one of the films I like, I think it was, now I get this right, because I sing The Wanderer, and I think it was The Wanderers, something like that film.
Yes, it was Wanderers. Wanderer, come out and play.
Yeah, my...
I remember sixth grade I saw that.
My guest is telling me that I'm correct. But yes, and one of the things I remember about that, of course, they were in the subway all the time, going backwards and forwards and stuff like that in New York. Well, my guest, what can I tell you about her? She is basically an Italian rebel raised in the Bronx. So she knows about this, and she just said about it as we were chatting there. So anyway, I better introduce her, haven't I, before we start talking, because on my show today, I have the one and only Patricia Dunn. Hi, Patricia. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Thanks for having me on your show.
Excited. Come on, Wanderers, come out and play. Yes, that's it.
Yes, I watched that show. Well, see, in my day, and I'm giving away my age, they had no ratings on movies. So we'd like get on the subway, and we'd go to the movie theater, and we'd watch movies like The Wanderer, very inappropriate, but yes.
I thought the best thing was all the gangs dressed up in their various names, you know, like the clown things and all the roller skates.
And that was, I can tell you right now, all made up. I mean, we had in the 50s, the Fordham Baldies, and we had our gangs, but that was all made up. But it was kind of cool because they did go from the Bronx, and they had to make it alive to Coney Island.
So, yeah, exactly.
Which was in Brooklyn. Yeah.
So
I never went to Brooklyn.
Ah. Because when I sort of started reading about your book, which we'll get to in a minute, I thought, oh, that rings a bell. People getting on the underground subway, whatever you want to call it, and doing this. And I thought, oh, that reminds me of the film. And it did. But then you weren't even in the Bronx at the time. So you didn't know. But
no,
you were...
I was. I was in the Bronx at the time. I wasn't in Brooklyn.
Yeah, in Brooklyn. You're in the Bronx.
Yeah, 12. Yeah. Because if you were from the Bronx, you hated Brooklyn. You didn't show up. You didn't go to Brooklyn. That's all.
So. Okay. But because, with being, as you call yourself, an Italian rebel, you stayed where you wanted. Didn't go where the other places were.
We never went to Brooklyn because my parents hated Brooklyn. So if you're from the Bronx, it was like the Yankees versus the Mets. If you were from the Bronx, you'd go to Brooklyn. And if you were from Brooklyn, you didn't come to the Bronx. I was raised in the Bronx, and then I moved to LA and lived around the world, and then wound up back in New York, and now I'm in Stanford, which is more Italians than probably most parts of Italy. But Italian American is my background.
Yeah, well,
kind of the book is inspired by the neighborhood I grew up in, which is Pelham Bay, and the reason why it's first stop because it's the first stop on the 6th line.
Uh-huh.
Which, if you know the movie Taking a Pelham 1, 2, and 3,
yes,
which they've made.
Yep.
All right, they made 3 or 4 versions. The first and last versions are great. The other two, I don't even know why they bothered.
I totally agree with you. First one and last one. Yep, totally agree.
And but if you're on the L, we have something called the elevated train, which refer to the L. So the last stop is actually above ground, the L,
okay,
and then it goes underground, and then it becomes the subway, and it goes into Manhattan.
Right.
So, and it was the 6th. So, depending on if you were from the Bronx, we were the first stop in our mind. But anywhere else, or anybody else, considered us the last stop. Because, you know, there's nowhere else to go.
Right. Well, it's like in London. I mean, when I went over a few weeks ago, I got off at Heathrow, and I got the underground right from Heathrow to Arnos Grove, which is actually above ground. But that's not quite the last one. Sometimes they stop at Arnos Grove, sometimes they go on to Cock Foster's, and it depends.
At least in London, you have a train that you can take from. We don't have trains that you can take from our airports here, and this is New York.
I know. That's why when I went, I decided to go to Boston to get the plane rather than New York, because I could at least get a train to Boston.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go to your first, because it isn't your first book, is it? You've got another one.
Yeah, no, I have another one that was published. Many that I've written, but the other one that was published is Rebels by Accident, and it's a young adult book about a young Muslim American girl, and that was more inspired by my daughter, who she's kind of tries to hide the fact that she's Muslim and tries to kind of belong. She grows up in a Westchester County, uh-huh. Suburbs of New York. And she gets in trouble. Her parents kind of strict. She gets in trouble, and they sent her to go live with her grandmother to kind of learn what it's like to actually, live with a tough parent. And
right.
She's so tough. But then she gets caught up unbewittingly to everybody, and the revolution starts. So she gets caught up, her and her best friend, in the revolution that happens, and that's what that book was about.
Ah, right.
So that's, And so this book...
Yeah.
It was a book I started before that other book.
Aha.
25 years in the making. I started this book when I was a graduate student back in 1996.
Wow.
And it was very much based on my family.
Right.
And I did get an agent, but at the time that agent said, I can't sell fiction. So love your writing. Let's see what else you can do. Anyway, years later, I had a friend who was in that first class. Because I'm writing groups. Any of your writers that are listening, you need a writing group that's going to support you. She told me to go back to this book. I said, no, I'm never doing it again. I put it away, too many years on it. But she kind of, in her way, her name is Jim and Han, another wonderful author, said, look, you got to just take a look at it. And I realized, hey, enough years have passed where I think I can make this work. And I did, basically by fictionalizing more of the story. I was able to kind of make it a little bit more truer to the story I was trying to tell.
Okay.
Which is really about somebody returning home.
Yeah, because, this girl, Teresa, is that right? I think it's Teresa.
Angela Teresa. Well,
Angela.
No, actually, you got that right. No, her real name is Teresa, but her mother hated the name.
Calls her Angela. Right, yeah.
Got that. Wow, you read the book. Wow.
No, I just read the write-ups.
Yeah, that's what I would do, so that's okay.
No, but actually, you're right, because I know I had two or three people I was at school with who never used their first name. Quite often it might have been their father's name, and the mother wouldn't, had to differentiate.
My name. My mother swore she would name me anything but what she named me, Patricia, and that she got stuck naming me Patricia because she was really drugged up after she had me,
Oh, right.
And her mother-in-law came to her side and said, would you name your daughter after my child that died at a year old? And my mother was on too many drugs to realize that what the name was Patricia, and that was the only name she said
that
would ever name my kid.
Oh, no.
And my mother did not realize it until she looked at the birth certificate and then swore that everybody had to call me Trisha. And then if you're from the Bronx, it's Trisha. They have the R at the
right.
end.
Right, yeah.
My sister's Trina. Nobody in my family has ever called me Patricia except for my grandmother my entire life. And so my friends all call me Pat, and my
right.
mother hates that even more.
But it's funny. You always knew you were in trouble when your parents used all your names.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. The few times my mother ever called me, occasionally, yes. When she was really angry, and that meant...
That's it.
And my mother... She's very based on, very much based on the character that seems like very untrue life because she's over the top, is very much like my mother as a character in the book. If she's really mad, because she was always yelling and screaming, but if she really got mad, she closed her door and didn't say a word. So my mother got silent. That's when, my father very rarely yelled, but if he raised his voice, you listened because he didn't raise his voice
right.
often. But my mother, when she was angry, she shut her door and didn't say a word, and that's when you knew you'd better get out of the house or leave the country, because that was it.
You were in trouble then. You're right.
Yes.
So you go. The story basically is about this girl, and does she get sent to California? Is that where she ends up?
See what happens. So what happens is she thinks she's responsible for her brother, who's a child actor. They had a father who was really, he was more of the stage father.
Uh-huh.
So he was a child actor, and on the night that he's supposed to, the night before he's supposed to go to Hollywood for this big screen test, she convinces him and their best friend to go to Pelham Bay Park, where they used to always hang out to have one last blowout. And he winds up having an accident and becomes paralyzed.
Oh, crikey.
So she thinks that she feels it's her responsibility. She's responsible, and she can't deal with it, so she takes off. And basically, she becomes an activist in Los Angeles, and she gets involved with the anti-war movement. And so for 10 years, she doesn't come home, and she can't save her brother, and so she decides to save the world, which that doesn't work out too much either. But the day that she gets arrested, after she's just been at this big protest, and this is in, the book takes place on the verge of the Gulf War.
Right.
She gets a letter in the mail from her mom saying, here's a ticket, one-way ticket to New York. Your brother's getting married. You owe him. You got to show up. And she'd rather go back to jail, but she does go back to New York. And she's ready to face her brother after 10 years, and he's not there. He's disappeared.
Oh.
So he's getting married like in 3 days. And she doesn't know where he is, and nobody wants to tell her. And the mother says, well, we don't know where he is, but he's probably just blowing off steam. And they're also keeping this a secret from the woman he's marrying. So she makes a lot of assumptions about the people that she grew up with. It's like the question about you can go back, can you ever go back home? And it's like you can, but don't expect it to be the same way. So she makes a lot of assumptions, and she assumes first he's gone because he doesn't want to see her, and then he thinks, oh, he's only getting married so fast because she must be pregnant.
Yeah.
And then she realizes that the woman that he's marrying is actually gonna, if we go to war, she's a nurse, and she's gonna actually go back because she was a veteran.
Yeah.
And she'll go back to she'll go to Iraq to help.
Right.
And so that's the whole book is her trying to find her brother. And then basically all the characters within this family. And then she's really trying to figure out her. In the end, she finds herself is really, it's kind of like the Dorothy syndrome,
right?
Except in the Bronx.
Right.
And it's got the whole cast of characters, which is this neighborhood where everybody knows your business and,
right.
Yells at you from windows and all that kind of stuff. And you can't get away with a lot. And her family, especially her and her brother and her best friend, they're like the Americans on the block. They're Italian American, but they're not born in Italy, like everybody from the other side.
Right.
And nobody says the other side of what, because they all know that it's southern Italy, but they're from, the States, so they're always treated as the outsiders. So, so they kind of like bond together. But this is like the family they grew up in, and the father, who's a great character, who's based on my father, who passed away during COVID.
I'm sorry about
this book. Yeah, I'm sorry too, but I think the reason why this book came out now is I think he's somewhere
pushed you.
There's a lot of there's a lot of things about saints and superstitions in the book too, and I think my father had a lot to do with that. But anyway, she thinks he's a recovered alcoholic, and it turns out he's not, and he's an exterminating business that best friend. And it's a lot of crazy stuff that goes on.
And who's Fat Freddy?
So Fat Freddy is one of the neighborhood kids that she grew up with, who actually, his name was really Fat Freddy Fangul, which I don't know if you let a curse, so I won't curse. I just said a curse in Italian.
He's
kind of a jerk. And she thinks he's kind of like that the brother owes him money, and that's why he's disappeared. She figures this out, and he tried to, sexually assault her when she was younger. He's just a jerk, and he shows up on the scene, him and his goons, and she thinks, oh my God, this is why my brother's disappeared, because he owes him money, and why would he owe him money? I don't understand. And it turns out that, I'm not going to give away the whole book, but let's just say that a lot of the things that she believes is more like the Hollywood version of what Italian people believe of Italian Americans.
Right.
They think everybody's in the mafia, and they think that everybody's like part of all of this stuff, organized crime, and she realizes that she started believing this stuff too because she's been away from home, and she starts to find out truths that she didn't understand as much. So,
Fat Freddy
is one of the characters.
It takes, as of the title, The Last Stop on Six, because it's
in Pelham Bay.
It takes her back, doesn't it? This is the thing what she walks into and what she finds out and the things she, and I'm sure she's a pretty smart, quick talker and that, but it seems like she sort of makes a lot of assumptions along the way and.
I know. She thinks she knows it all and realizes she doesn't know a lot at all. Like, it's a family that's very loud, but they're a loud family that doesn't really say what they're really thinking or feeling. So you think right. that, like, yeah, I mean, people used to come over, like, visit, when they would visit, like, from other places, like college and stuff, and they'd say, why is everybody yelling? And I'd be like, yelling, that's the way they talk.
Yeah.
And so, and everybody's, like, saying things that are so inappropriate, right? They're talking about, oh, who got pregnant?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, addicted to drugs. So you think everything's out in the open, and then you find out, oh, all the secrets that are really being held,
yeah,
right?
Indeed,
and so, and because she lives in, and like my own experience, because she lives in California, you know, the mother would talk to her regularly, but she'd say, Mom, why didn't you tell me about this? Well, what are you going to do about it? It was always that feeling of, like, once you leave, to this day, personally, my family will still tell stories, and they'll be like, oh, but you were in California, and I will have to tell them, no, I was 4 at the time. I was not in California. So if you do decide to leave, you are erased from all history. That's pretty much how it works. If you leave, yes. It's like, oh, you were in California. I'm like, no, I was 12. I was there.
Yeah.
So maybe that's probably why I became a writer, because it's easier to be heard that way.
My wife's father was Italian, and her mother was Irish. So, as the priest told her, half Gaelic and half Garlic. The priest always used to tell her.
Yeah, exactly.
I met her. I mean, I briefly knew them. That, you know, they passed a couple of years after we got together.
Sorry.
But it was just like that. It was just like that. You know, the sort of. And my wife used to say, "Oh, but that's the secret about that and that." And I said, "The what?" I said. She said, "Oh, yeah, that's the secret that everybody knows."
Well, that's the thing. And the thing that's even worse is, like, my grandmother, you know, she's not a character in the book, but she would, like, you know, and my grandmother happened to be, she grew up in a deaf community, but she was from Italy, and she would, like, make sure, like, when my grandmother was divorced, so my character is based on my stepfather, and my stepfather and father did become friends, which people can't believe, but anyway, it's a whole other thing, because they were having an affair, but I won't get into whatever, but...
Oh, yeah, normal stuff, yeah.
So my grandmother did not, her family was visiting from Italy, and she made us swear that we did not tell them that our stepfather was our real father.
Right.
She hadn't seen her sister in 20 years, so they didn't really know my father.
Mm-hmm.
So they meet my sister, and they meet my brother. My sister at that time was like a young adolescent. She was like, she hated the world, and my brother was kind of aloof. So the cousin that's visiting believes that they would call their father Gene.
Right.
Now, I understood a lot of Italian, and I come home from college, and she says to me in Italian, you know, you seem so warm-hearted, and you seem very close to your father, so I don't understand why you would call him Gene. Like, immediately I go into, I'm sorry, I no capisce. I pretend like I didn't understand a word she said. So she goes back, and then I find out her not secret is, she was having an affair for years and married somebody else and having many affairs. I mean, you know, she had her own thing, but my grandma was all worse. So then she goes back to Italy and she tells the family, and not even in a judgmental way, that my mother, all 3 kids are from different fathers. So if people either know your secrets, or what they don't know, they know something's going on and they fill in something.
They make something up. Yeah.
So, yes, exactly. They make something up. So it's much worse than if you just would have told them the truth.
So in your book, I mean, does the, not calling her Teresa, does Angela,
that's okay.
Does she get?
She would be happy with that.
Yeah, she. I mean, she. It must be, as you say, she's sort of gone and come back, and there's the story. Must be all sorts of stories, like you're saying about the father, and then all this business with the brother. That must be very awkward, but real in finding out these bits and pieces, and then you say, you know, you piece bits together and you come up with the wrong answer, and then she guesses, she finds it's not that, it's something else, which is very much like you're saying, you know, your own life.
Yeah, I mean, it was very inspired by my own life. I mean, my brother did not have an accident. He was a child actor. And my father was a recovered alcoholic, although my father never drank at all until I went to California. And when I came back, my father showed me a chip. And I'm like, what's that? Oh, I've been in recovery for 3 years. I'm like, when did you start drinking? You know, I mean, these are the things that nobody ever, like, tells you about because you're in California. What are you going to do about it? But no, but it's inspired by their personalities. Like, my stepfather was very much that similar. And my father and my stepfather became very good friends.
Uh-huh.
My father did, you know, an exterminated business.
Yeah.
But the friend Billy, I also have a sister that in the earlier version she was in the book, but she got cut. But the right. friend Billy, but the artist that Billy is, that's kind of, my sister was, you know, an artist, and now she's in finance. I guess it's a different kind of art.
Right.
But he's the very interesting character because, you know, she kind of lost her virginity. They were best friends. Family kind of adopted him, and she comes back and thinks that something's going on, and also she realizes that she doesn't understand him. So everything that she kind of thinks was one way is really yep. something else. And she's also got this whole idea that, you know, she's been this activist trying to stop this war as we're leading to this war. This war is already, like, predetermined.
Right.
But, you know, everybody knows.
Yeah. Right.
But she kind of really kind of into that last moment thinks there's hope. And so what she finds out is that, and she decides, you know, that, you know, I guess, or what she learns is sometimes you can come home, but, you know, the assumptions you make can get you in a lot of trouble, which is what happens. So, and the brother is a collector of plastic saints. I don't know if you've ever seen them, but Italians, Americans tend to, they have these plastic saints like St. Anthony or St.
Yes,
Joseph. It's a saint
yes,
for everything.
Yes,
and
yes.
So he has a closet of them, and he pulls out different ones based on like whatever he's trying to conjure up in his life. And the only thing that she's got to find him are these three saints. One's
right.
St. Anthony, the you know, the person I still pray to because I lose things all the time.
Right.
And then there's the saint, then, you know, then there's the saint of the military, which she can't understand, and then she figures it out. And then there's the saint of the, actors. And
yeah.
she kind of can't, you know. So anyway, but she, these saints she, like, uses to try to find her brother and, like, this, you know, she's looking for everything she can. So,
yeah.
But my favorite characters are the side characters, like, you know, Carmella, who's, like, the tuxedo woman, and Mrs. Bellini, who yells out the window the whole time, and, you know, fights with the mother, and
so
the neighborhood, I think, is that's pretty true to where I grew up.
It's funny, when I first came over to America, I ended up going to on a IBM course up in New York, and I actually was staying in Chinatown. But it was November.
You're right by Little Italy, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it was November, and I went to Little Italy to eat and have a look around. And there's the one bar there where they filmed The Sopranos and Sinatra sang and stuff like that.
Yeah, so you were like later in, yeah.
Yeah, so I went there and... Yeah, I went there one night and they said, oh, we got karaoke next night. And I do karaoke. I used to run shows and stuff like that. So I said, I'll come down. There's something to do, like a Wednesday or something like that. Anyway, I decided to go for a meal in Little Italy. And, you know, you have the sort of TV version of what it's going to be like sort of thing and everything. Anyway,
yeah.
I'm sitting in this restaurant without a word of a lie, sitting in this restaurant. And I'm sort of sitting and there's another couple of tables up a layer. And there's one table sort of higher than the rest. And I'm sitting there chatting to the waiter and stuff like that. And I'm watching these people come in and go to this person on the top table. And I'm thinking to myself, what the heck am I seeing? Am I seeing what I think I'm seeing? Anyway, I finish my meal and the waiter says, I've been talking about the fact you're from England and everything. Yeah, so-and-so wants to see you. And he took me up to this person on the top table. And I thought, my goodness, behave yourself. There'll be a horse's head in your bed in the morning. And he was just all growly and stuff like that. And then I went to the bar and the boys were there in the long black coats and stuff like that. And then from there, I had to walk through Chinatown. Yeah, how I got out of there, I have no idea. That was best behavior.
No, it's crazy. And actually, if you would have The Sopranos, like, Little Italy was a huge area.
Yeah.
That had a lot of Italians.
Yeah.
And then by
oh.
that time, it started to, like, really dwindle. And so most of the Italians moved out.
Yeah.
And, you know, then it got more and more Chinatown. But, no, you did have a lot of those.
Oh,
like,
yeah. You had
it
them.
Exactly. And where I, you know, the funny thing is people, they don't know about the Bronx. I mean,
right.
it's just Pelham Bay. I mean, we had bookies and there are a lot of people that were in, like, the mafia. But the Bronx is the Switzerland of the mafia.
Oh, okay.
So,
yep.
So what all the families have agreed on is, like, you know, you have the family that owns, like, Brooklyn and you've got the family that's Jersey and the family here. But the Bronx, you could all live in. And I won't mention areas that actually they mostly had lived
right.
in, because if they still live there, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But everybody agrees not to, like, do anything to anybody. You know what I mean? It's kind of like
it's like a no-go area, like a no-go peace area, like Switzerland, as you said. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like the movie The Wanderers, where you know they had their like neutral territory.
Yeah, yes, yes, indeed.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it's funny. But everybody had nicknames and like you know, and everybody you know it's. That, you know, like it was, you know, it's funny. Yeah. There was somebody called Johnny Barbecue, and and we're like, and so my friend was like, oh my god, does he barbecue people? And I'm like, no, he just barbecues all the time. Like, you know what I mean? So a lot of times the names are just like straightforward.
I know.
But then there was like, yeah, then there was somebody. What was my father had this one guy that my father knew was called, I don't know, Johnny Slice. Johnny Slice, and I was like, oh, he likes pizza, and he's like, no, he likes. Slices up. I mean, they weren't boy names. They were just so literal that they were just like ridiculously funny sometimes.
Oh no, we had that in London with the craze down in Bethnal Green and stuff like that. And you know, they had their various names, you know, the Hammer and Jack the Hat McVitie and all this. And some of them were because you know were quite funny, and others were like you say because
they're literal.
You don't ask.
Yeah, you don't ask. And if you do, you're like, you don't want to know.
Yeah, exactly.
But my favorite name of all, and I think I use this in the book,
yep.
My brother's friend, okay, we all called him Lip. And people were like, oh, do you talk a lot? No. Why'd you call him Lip? And nobody could figure out. It's because when he was 8 years old, see, things stick to you, right? You know, in the Bronx, right? So when he was 8 years old, he was in a supermarket, and somebody threw, for some reason, a frozen chicken. And he got hit in the lip with a frozen chicken. And from that day on, he was called Lip.
Well, just like...
Never called anything else but Lip.
Well, so I'm sure...
the way it works.
It's the way it works, and it's the way it's worked on this show with you, talking about this book of yours, Last Stop on the Six, and the beautiful stuff and all the different characters and everything. It's been great fun. I could chat for another half hour, I tell you. But time is running out. So what I've got to do, Pat, is hand the show over to you and have you tell everybody where people can find more about you and your books. So over to you.
Okay, thank you. So, well, thank you all for listening. I'm very, very big on people supporting your independent bookstores. So you can do that. You can also find out a lot of places you can get my book and about me. And I also have a free newsletter all about how not to write. So if you're interested in not writing, look it up. And I'm Patricia Dunn, and that's Patricia, D-U-N-N, .com. And you go to my website, and you can find out all about the book and my other things that are coming up. And if you want to know why my name's so Irish, that's a whole other show.
All right.
Yes, okay. But please, thank you. And as I say to everybody, you do not have to read the book, just buy it.
Right, exactly. Just use it there. Leave it on the table for other people to see.
Yeah, leave it on the table or put it, you know, you can put it under the table if you're shaking a little.
Exactly, yeah. Help the leg, yeah. Anyway, it's been terrific chatting
to you.
I really could have chatted. I got a sudden shock. I looked at the timer on the show thing. Crikey, it's nearly end of time. I better wrap it up. I'm so enjoying myself. But thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
You.
It's been really great chatting to you.
Well, it's great chatting with you too.
There it goes. My guest today, Patricia Dunn, D-U-N-N, no E at the end, D-U-N-N, Patricia Dunn. We don't call her Patricia, we call her Pat. Patricia Dunn, and this great book of hers called Last Stop on the Six. Looks, sounds a really, it's a humorous, love, whatever. It's a great book, and I highly recommend it. Just sort of reading the bits about it and stuff like that. It's one of those books that you know you're going to laugh at, and it's also going to touch you a bit as well. And that's it. Well, that's it for today's show. I'll be back tomorrow with a fresh guest. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget.